seems to go on forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got another 5 minutes of this.
No, I'm always trying to think of getting a bit of introduction music in there, but yeah, a bit of spaghetti western.
Right at the cutting edge of technology.
Couple of gunslingers. Well, welcome back to Between Consensus and Conspiracy podcast. Just never talk about, I was thinking about it, never really focus on what it's called and why it's called it. It's because it seems to be that modern life gives you those two options. You've either got to agree with what everyone else agrees with, but on the other end of the extreme, you've got a load of conspiracy nuts, and the truth's usually somewhere in the middle, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I'm Jerry, this is my brother Julian, where we talk about subjects that are usually quite controversial and try and navigate our way through choppy waters in a way that doesn't fall into the hateful category, which seems to get more and more difficult as we go along, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I suppose we've got nothing to talk about as one specific subject today, but I was looking at it and a lot of them do kind of have something or other to do with race.
Well, it's crazy how much happens, isn't it? We did the last one just after the general election in the UK, kind of like towards the end of December.
Yeah.
And now we're kind of, so nearly 2 months. And fuck me, you think how much has happened since then? It's crazy, isn't it? You've got coronavirus, you've got a stock market plunge, you've had the Democratic meltdown in America, their hunt for the person who's going to take on Trump. You've got the Third World War near enough with Iran. It's just one thing after another, isn't it?
Soleimani getting bombed.
Yeah.
It was weird because I remember we did one not long after Christmas last year, and we were saying how lovely it was to have had a break.
Mm.
And I remembered, and I was so looking forward to Christmas this year because I just figured we'd actually have a break from all the mudslinging and shit throwing and shit. And it just hasn't, was it? It's like having a really shit summer going into the autumn. Thinking we're without a suntan, isn't it?
You think,
I've got this bloody winter to go through and I haven't even had a bit of sunshine. It's been tough. I was thinking, right, I go through various phases. And what the phase that I'm into now is I'm really interested in people and how we think and what we are. You know, I think we've really... There's a brilliant book I've just finished called Selfie. It's about how modern age is increasing narcissism in people. And in it, he said that one of the faults with individualism is as a people, we've just become far too judgmental.
Mm.
We're so quick to see the badness in others. And we're so slow to forgive.
Yeah.
I'm big on thinking that most people aren't bad. They're just different to you.
Because
they're different to you doesn't mean they're bad. Try and let them explain why they think the way they did instead of just...
Well, yeah, it's true, isn't it? Look, you get stuck with anyone on a desert island or any kind of crisis, you'd be best of mates in a couple of days, wouldn't you?
Mm.
You can't... Maybe. Oh, most people, I would have thought.
Maybe. One or two, I could think of straight up.
Yeah, but it's like going back to being a kid, you know? You kind of run around with someone for 10 minutes and they're your best mate, aren't
they? Yeah. Well, I remember, both you and I used to work in the same hotel, but at different times. But there were a couple of really oddballs I used to work with, and people hated them. And I quite liked them.
You know,
I wouldn't want to take them out with my friends and stuff. But I was always able to find the quirkiness in others in a nice way.
Yeah.
So I was thinking that something's happened to me lately, and often when things happen, I wonder whether or not that's just me, whether it's a cultural thing, or whether it's a new universal human nature thing, right? So my son has recently had a mild operation. So it wasn't big, you know about it. It wasn't big, wasn't anything serious. He's off school for about 2 weeks. And I noticed, and I suspect this is a universal thing, because me and you are obviously of the same culture, but I've married into kind of Greek-English family, but there's a bit of a Greek matriarchal thing in my family. You're into a different culture, aren't you? But it's quite matriarchal as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
And something I noticed, and I'm fairly sure it'd be the same with you, is that when there's a sick child, the women in the family go into overcook mode. It's like the family size has doubled and everyone just brings food, which wouldn't normally be a problem, apart from the fact that I'm trying to eat less and I've got a thing about throwing away food. I hate throwing away food.
Yeah.
So for about 3 weeks, it was like, what's got least mould on it now that I can have for lunch and dinner? I don't know, anyway. But what do you reckon? Is that universal? Is that women? Is that a woman thing where they just go into protective mode?
Yeah, sick probably. Child, yeah, kind of. I mean, I personally have to deal with it all the time. It's a daily thing. But the culture I've married into is just kind of generally like it's just a generous culture, isn't it?
Yeah.
Of providing and so we've got two fridges and they're both full. And I'm sure if we had three, we'd work out a way of buying a third more food.
It's I don't know how open we should be on an open podcast, so I don't want to crack jokes about the amounts of toilet rolls and tissues you've got, boxes full that you've got in your house.
Well, if coronavirus does kick in, we'll be all right for a couple of months.
Anyway, so I'm finding life quite stressful at the moment. I'm struggling a bit. I must have. I've come off social media on my phone. I'm just getting sick of it. I think what I'm recognising what I was, right? And I think the other point you made in this book, which I'd sussed out anyway, was that we got this environment where you've got a competitive media, but just all vying for attention, and the way they get attention is to sow and harvest outrage, right? And that's how they get looked at. Because a lot of it's free, content is free. So how they monetize is getting people to look. And how you get people to look is to wind people up.
Yeah.
And what's happening is I think that is addictive.
Yeah.
Certainly is. Because sometimes when I get really mad with people pissing me off on Facebook, I can't help but look, and it's like, why am I looking? It's like self harm, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I was doing it. So what happens is I don't know the veracity of an article that I've read. 9 times out of 10, you're not looking at articles to educate yourself. You're looking at articles that back up what you already agree with.
Yeah.
So you're not, too often we're not looking at how trustworthy that source is. So you read an article that winds you up and then you stick it on social media to hopefully to wind everybody else up.
Yeah.
And I just thought, over the last couple of years, I get away from that. But it's hard because I'm seeing so many people on my Facebook page that you can tell they're just getting their info from one source.
Mm.
And it's constantly, they're winding them up and they're seeing sharing this as a form of therapy. But where is this therapeutic to them? It's winding every other person up.
Yeah.
Or some people, a lot of people can ignore it. I just find it difficult to ignore.
Yeah.
You know, and I got roped into a couple of really long-winded bust-ups of people over the last few weeks, which I quite enjoy. You know, but, you know, it just bugs you when...
I don't enjoy it. I got on Twitter for a bit and luckily it kind of like died on me. I don't know if I got banned or what, but it wasn't obvious. I just couldn't log into my account.
Yeah.
But it's so much better because I can't... I can't do that kind of wake up in the middle. Yeah. I'm not one of them people that can throw something out there and sleep peacefully, you know?
No, I agree.
And you constantly... rethink, oh, I could have said that, should have said that, could have put it a better way, and I don't want to be woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning and now that's coming from my head, you know?
So many times.
Yeah, it's not healthy.
No, I'm not. But I try, so I find it all quite stressful, the world currently.
Mm.
So we've got to try and laugh at it a bit. So even though it bugs certain stories, bug me, there's quite a few. Did you hear the story about the Cats, the musical?
Yeah.
So there's a black...
Well, what about being racist? Yeah.
She's a black actress.
Yeah.
Dancer. But her cat uniform is white.
Yeah.
So she's got a white mask, but she's black. And then she didn't seem bothered. She didn't seem bothered by it.
Yeah, she seems like the fucking most sensible one out of the lot.
Yeah. Then there was... I was listening to Andrew Doyle... The comedian the other day was talking about he's behind that Titania McGrath spoof kind of Twitter account, and she put out something that that.
So she's like the most woke you could be, isn't yeah. she? She's this kind of fake yeah. made up
character
that's kind of extreme woke, but it's yeah. almost as though it's kind of borders on ridiculousness and, yeah. And I don't know, it's quite funny because it does, a lot of people take it seriously because we are at that point in the world where you could, it's hard to work out if you're being ridiculous or if you're being
because he did one saying that what is it? Mary Poppins is racist because the chimney sweeps right, yeah. will have blackface.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And, you know, and she reels, she reels people in and then people are arguing. That's ridiculous. Yeah. So that's the best bit about it all, isn't it? Because people haven't seen the joke. Yeah. What pisses me off most is the arsehole that comes along and tells them. And it's like, why can't you tell them? Why? I'm enjoying this. Yeah. Bloke made a twat of himself. Why don't you come and fart in a lift? For fuck's sake. Anyway. So, but then he made the point that a couple of months afterwards, the New York Times did say something similar, didn't they?
That
chimney sweeps and blackface problematic and stuff like that. New York Times.
Yeah,
you know, so they followed. So it's where satire and truth kinds of meld in. You know, you're in a bit of a mad world.
Yeah,
and there was that article in Pink News, the gay newspaper. Bigging up Pakistan because they're trans friendly.
Oh, right, yeah. Of course.
When really they're just the same as Iran, where they deny that there's
homosexuality.
So anyone who's homosexual, they push down the change in sex route so we could still hold on to the fact that we're gay friendly.
Yeah.
So this newspaper that in every other form is quick to find homophobia everywhere because it's a useful weapon to wield when convenient.
Yeah.
But just denying that it's an issue because they said, well, now
the
trans
Pakistan regime is so much better than the evil Tories.
Yeah. Well, it's strange. Isn't it? And then there's that. Have you heard of that? Did you know? Are you familiar with Jamila Jalil?
Yes. Yeah.
She's an activist, isn't she? She's a British lady.
Actress.
Activist. I think she is an actress as well. I don't watch them programmes, but yes, she is. And she. I listened to a hard talk with her a little while ago, and she said, I don't want to call people liars. I don't know. I've not lived their life, but she's probably about 30, 35, brought up in London. The racism in her school.
Yeah, that was
she
right.
Describes,
yeah.
I just find it hard to get my head around because I was like 15, 20 years before that in London schools.
Yeah.
And it was nothing like that.
No.
So
because she was she came out one about a year ago, didn't she? Quoting that she'd been called the P word every day in school.
Yeah,
and I remember ringing you up because that was that was in the '90s, and because I grew up 15 years before that, a good 20 years before that in school.
Yeah,
with a high percentage of Indian Pakistani kids, some black kids, not many white kids, and I told you I never heard anyone say the P word.
Yeah.
Ever. I can't remember it.
Mm.
And yeah, there might have been a little bit of racism, but probably hardly anything. And that's a serious jump to say that you... I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Growing up in that environment and saying that you heard it every day.
Yeah. I don't know. Look, I think there's... Look, maybe we're... I'm open-minded to the fact that maybe we're blind to it because we're white.
No, but the thing is, I grew up, all my mates in school were Pakistani.
Yeah,
all my close mates in school. I had one white mate, and all my mates in school were Pakistani. I never heard an argument about that any time. Well, I had arguments about other things, but never about race.
Well, I went to a school called Faraday that closed down, but before it closed down, it was part of a panorama program called you can watch it on YouTube. It's called The Best of Days or The Best Days? And it was basically saying, look, this is the state of our state schools. And it was pretty horrific viewing. It was it was filmed the year before I was meant to go there. I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified of going there because I'd been to school in Malta in the later years of my junior school.
Yeah.
So, and then when I came back, I went to school out of area. So when I was going to high school, I was going there new. Now, I knew people from a few years back that was going there, but I was terrified because I'd watched this panorama before and it was naughty. And the worst thing was, it was the day before, I was a nervous wreck. Grange Hill was on as well.
Yeah.
So that was, I was bog washing was a thing, I thought.
I never saw it. Putting your head down the toilet and flushing the chain,
flushing it as some sort of initiation program. I was pooping myself. And then the day before, my dad and my stepmum said, oh, we've got a present for you. And I thought, oh, what is it? You know, and Joe pulled out a fucking briefcase. It was the days of Adidas sports bags.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Just as a... Yeah. And then, I suppose he could see the disappointment on my face. And then he came out with the thing that he always used to come out with. Be a leader, don't be a sheep. I'm 12 years old, man. Anyway, what happened was, because that programme had been 30 years old, they did a programme on the BBC about it, on a radio documentary.
Yeah.
There was a girl that went to our school, worked for the BBC, she revisited it, and I didn't realise that changed the education system in Britain, because it right. shocked the whole of the country.
Right.
And what they were saying, which I didn't realise, was that Southall was becoming very Asian dominated at the time.
Yeah.
So they didn't want minority groups monopolising whole schools. So what they were doing...
Southall's West London. This is all in West London.
And we were in Acton, bordering on Shepherd Bush. So they used to bus Indian kids from Southall to Acton.
Mm.
And the girl was saying that sometimes you see NF written on walls.
To mix up the
mix yeah, up yeah, the, yeah, the, to mix yeah. up. And she said that you'd see NF written on walls and stuff. Yeah. And we had NF written on our walls, remember? Because we had black friends, remember?
Do you think it was that? Or
well, I did. I know that I did, because I used to hang around the Vale.
Yeah, I know you did. Yeah, no, yeah. I don't know. I never knew that. Well, I remember NF being a spread on the wall.
Yeah.
I always thought it was because we lived in a... Because we had Jewish people next door. But you're right, it was on our wall.
Yeah, it was on our wall, not the Jewish neighbours. Yeah. And it was because, I don't know, I just presumed it was the lot from the Askew Arms.
Right.
Because I wasn't allowed in the Askew Arms. So then all my mates used to get in the pub, because I was a late developer.
Mm.
And then I started to meet friends like Kevin and stuff from Acton and Acton Vale. Yeah, so I went to a new group of kids. So I think it had something to do with that. But there was a bit in there where the Indian bloke, she started to try to talk about racism. And then the Indian fella that said, well, if I'm honest, the most stick we got was from the black kids. If there was anything that I saw, it was black on brown rather than white on black and white on brown.
Yeah.
Because... White on black wouldn't have lasted 5 minutes in Faraday.
No,
it just wouldn't. Mm. You know, they would not have lasted 5 minutes. So anyway, so this Jamila Jalil, so she's got eating disorder. We shouldn't fat shame. We shouldn't do this. We shouldn't judge people on their looks. However, she's really quite. Yeah. Oh, it does everything to do with her looks. But anyway, she was getting a bit stick a little while back. So then she came out, I got to get the phraseology right, but she came out as queer bisexual.
Oh, because didn't she get criticised for playing a gay person in a show?
Mm.
And then they criticised her because she wasn't gay.
So she's taking the place of gay. So
now she supposedly is...
She's now queer bisexual. I don't even know what queer is. We had that discussion before the other day when I watched a load of people trying to explain what queer is. Mm. Everyone had different.
Yeah,
I used to think queer was gay, but apparently it's not now. Mm. I think it might have a political connotation, but it's all subjective. So there's no dictionary you can look up. So she has now elevated herself in her victim status because she's not straight. She's queer and bisexual.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But what I don't understand is she's just expanded her possibility of sexual partners massively, yet now that's some form of oppression.
Yeah,
I don't get it. If you were to say as a young person, you could sleep with anyone, that's the opposite of oppression, surely. But anyway,
it's funny, isn't it? I was thinking today, I was listening to Douglas Murray with this kid that's got a podcast in Oxford that's really good, Cosmic Skeptic.
Oh, right. Did you listen
to
that?
Yeah, he really quite digs in, doesn't he?
Got in with me, just to give a bit of background. Yeah. I've never heard of Cosmic Skeptic. I heard him the other day on a podcast, and he gave the best argument I'd heard for veganism, because I've always been a bit vegan skeptic, but he gave a very, very, very convincing argument. Yeah. So anyway, right. So back to you, the Douglas Murray.
Yeah, I think he's a philosophy student at Oxford. But yeah, so yeah, Douglas Murray on. Douglas Murray's just written a book. What's it called? Do you remember?
It's Madness of Crowds.
Madness of Crowds. That's right. Yeah. So he picks on like transsexual, homosexual, race, and religion, or something. Four things that are the big talking points in this woke environment, and he kind of critiques them, and. So at one point he was saying to the host, the student, he said, look, he said, I think we shouldn't be focusing so much on this stuff. You've got so many other important questions your generation should be asking.
Yeah.
And I just got thinking, maybe that's part of it. Maybe that I'm not sure there are so many important questions. I've had this thought for a while that we're kind of comfortable enough. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah,
I think we're
yeah.
probably one of the first generations that have ever lived where I'd be happy if we didn't improve progress any further. I think, well, look, we've always got to progress. There's always issues. There's poor people, of course, but maybe make the energy a bit more efficient. But there are not many things. I mean, what are we waiting for? What's the next?
I don't know. Kind of technological space, trying to live underground.
Yeah, but do we really need any of that stuff?
So there was a bloke on the Joe Rogan podcast about living longer.
Maybe that
to make us live longer, like hundreds of years.
But even then, what's? I know. Maybe I say, what's the point in that until we get there? But it's almost as though, kind of, if we could elevate everyone to our standard of living or as many people as possible,
it would be all right.
It'd be all right.
Good. But it's not human nature, is it?
No, of course
there's always
not.
A mountain to climb. There's always...
No, I get it. But it's not first. Like we're living in... It's not like these kids that are going through Oxford are living through kind of like, look, we can do this, we can do that, we can do that. I'm not seeing that many kind of goals we can struggle with, apart from the late, like an updated version of an iPhone. You know, it's not...
Yeah. It's like, not a big jump, is it?
No. So maybe that's part of this obsession with the weirdness and the smallness of things. And I feel bad saying the smallness because I presume some people are so lost in it they don't see it as a small issue. But
I mean, look, I think we're getting a... I think what's happened, this mental health thing, I think that's becoming a bit of an issue. I think maybe because we don't have so many struggles, maybe. Or maybe just...
Yeah.
It's weird. It's hard to pin down that one, isn't it? Because you can say that we don't have as many struggles, but obviously people are struggling for something, whether it's for meaning, searching for meaning or purpose or where they fit in. But I don't think... I'm not one of them people that thinks, oh, well, our generation, these kids need to toughen up.
No, I'm not saying you are.
No,
I know. There are issues change, yeah.
But they're more than going out into space and living.
Yeah, but we're fundamentally, most of us are comfortable. Most of us living in the UK now are comfortable.
Of course we are, yeah.
I mean, we're like it's a tough one to argue, isn't it? When people are going to food banks and stuff, but... I don't know, you know, it's almost like, well, I don't know, most people have got houses, most people have got heating, they've got technology,
hold on, this is what I'm thinking, because I've been thinking this for a while, because this links to mass shootings, all sorts of things, mass shootings, incels, you know, that involuntary celibates, things like that, or you've got Islamism, or you've got the rise of racism, and far right, and all sorts of stuff. And also people joining groups online. You know, everyone has to be in a tribe. He made a point in this book that we're tribal beings, right? All right, advanced humans have been about 200,000 years, but we're talking about another 1.5 million years of less advanced humanoid forms. The vast majority of that has been tribal, and we're really quick to slip into tribes.
Yeah,
and that's why I detest it. That's what's doing my head online.
Yeah.
Because when you're tribal, you're fucking stupid, because you won't see the other person's point of view. You won't accept that there is a coherent opposite point of view, and you can see it all the time. Now, I can give the best argument in the world to someone, and 5 minutes later, they're just off again. It's just a waste of time. And he made the point that one of these countries in South America where there's a massive murder rate, and what they did was put in a poor, really poor area. They set up a boxing club for these kids. And all kids that have grown up with each other joined a boxing club. And they're all getting on okay, but it was getting a bit too busy. So they divided it up into mornings and afternoons. Within 2 weeks, the afternoon raided the mornings well, with handmade guns and sticks, and people were getting murdered simply for dividing up into two groups and that group. But you see it many times when they take kids like prison kids that take camping that originally they're from different gangs, they're trying to get them together, and then all of a sudden there's cliques between those two groups, and then they find out there's another group in a field that they just see smoke coming from a fire, and automatically when they don't know there's another group, that group join together, and then animosity starts between a group that they've not seen before, and it's all over the place. And this is what I think, and I think when you take away, I'm not religious, again, I'm not, but you take away every structure from above us, like we used to have linked to religion or culture or family or
patriotism.
All that sort of stuff is going, and we want to be part of something.
Mm.
And whereas before, you had no way of contacting other weirdos. That's wrong. I don't mean to say weirdos, but any cranky kind of, you're a real minority in your thing, i.e. whether you're a paedophile or incel, have trouble with women or whatever. You never had a way of linking with other people like you, but now online you can find other people like you, and then all of a sudden you're part of a group, and then you're in a closed little group, and those little things can grow and fester. We all need to be part of something, and that's what I notice is happening on Facebook and things like that. I just don't want to be part of that, and it's tempting, because when I first got into the new online stuff, I thought, oh yeah, I want to be one of them. I want to push myself to the front. I want to be known for being one of those.
Mm.
And then really quickly, I thought, no, I really don't. But you saw it, you know, with Instinct and Rebellion is another similar thing, when they were trying to say we need to keep it sensible. But then you had the other group that wanted to go canning town because they wanted to be noticed. They wanted to be seen as people to look up to. So when they go to a pub, everyone's nudging, saying, you know what, that's that bloke and who did this and stuff like that. Yeah. It's all part of human nature that I just want to extract myself from.
Yeah.
And I think since, maybe I'm a closet right winger. I don't think I am. I think I'm right on some subjects, left on others. But I think I feel so much better not being tied to one political way of thinking, because I feel I can look down in a more honest way. I'm not saying I haven't got my biases, because I think I do. But I mean, here's a good example. I know I've got biases on stuff. Do you remember the other day? So this tribal stuff, people are really quick to jump on stuff, aren't they? So Sajid Javid, who was the we had an election, Conservatives won. Sajid Javid was
Home Secretary.
The
Chancellor of the
Exchequer. And basically, it seems like Number 10 Boris and Dominic Cummings want to, instead of there being the Prime Minister and Chancellor of the Exchequer as two separate groups that have often throughout history really struggled against each other, they wanted to bring him in and more under control and get rid of his special advisors, and he didn't do that, so he left. And you saw Twitter straight away, oh, more evidence of Tory racism, racism. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then within half an hour, they brought in another guy, what's his name? Rishi Sunak, isn't it?
Yeah,
so he's a Ugandan Asian. And then the same people, Uncle Tom, native informant, and stuff like that. It's bizarre. So whatever you do, you can't win. No. When you're tribal, and it will work the other way around.
Yeah,
if Jeremy Corbyn would have got in, and similar would have happened, you would have had people on the right doing exactly the same thing. I think I sent you an article written in The Guardian yesterday, didn't I?
Oh, about him and Ugandan Asians. There's so many Asians in the Tory party.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, I it was written by an Asian person, but there's a guy that I really like, who's really fair, that I follow on Twitter, and who was it? There was a documentary the other day. Did you watch that documentary the other day about the Sikh, about the brother Sunny Hundle? There's a guy called Sunny Hundle who who's a Sikh commentator. He's a commentator who happens to be a Sikh rather than a Sikh commentator. But he did a really good story on his brother. His brother became very, very strong in his Sikh religion. And he really fell out with his brother because he thought his brother was becoming a bit extreme.
Right.
And his brother recently died, and he went back to go back to his brother's connection with Sikhism and stuff like that. And it was a really tough, interesting documentary. Really, really worth watching, because he kind of fell in love with his brother after he died, and then went into the Sikh community. So whereas he was quite strong in his religion, it was in a kind of peaceful kind of way, and it was lovely. But there was an article yesterday in The Guardian basically saying that Ugandan Asians were put into Uganda as part of the British colony to police the Ugandan Africans. They made massive amounts of money, and they were basically the police for evil colonialism. And then they came over here rich and stuff, and that's now why they're joining the Tories. And Sonny Hundle basically said, well, this is just what the right do. We divide up good immigrants and bad immigrants.
Yeah.
You know, and he made a point and said, I've seen some people share this on Facebook, and I didn't want to do it, but I find this article really problematic. The article leaves out some important facts that fit dangerous but comfortable narrative. The article does what left-wingers frequently accuse the right of doing, fitting newcomers into good immigrant and bad immigrant categories. In this case, the bad immigrants are Ugandan Asians who are apparently racist, work for imperialists, and became rich. Here is a selection of newspaper cuttings that greeted the Ugandan Asians. And, you know, it's the Express and whatever it is.
Mm.
Quite very, very vile and racist in the 70s. Ugandan Asians weren't welcomed with open arms as collaborators, which was implied in the Guardian article.
Yeah, right.
They were generously received as refugees by ordinary Britons, yes, but the media and political establishment, no. Mm. And they came over poor. A lot of left-wing people cannot fathom that Asians can be Tories. Ask yourself this. Is it weird to have white people be conservative? No. Then is it not odd to see Asians being conservative either? We're just like everybody else. I can't believe I have to make this point.
Yeah.
The point of it is our political opinion is based on our personality traits.
Yeah.
And some, roughly 50% fall into each category all over the world.
Yeah, wherever
you are. So how anyone thinks if you're black or you're brown, you have to vote the way we want you to vote is racist, in my opinion.
Yeah, of course
it is. Remember when Chuka Umunu was described as not politically black by a white person.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, hold on. So as a white person, you're telling a black person how they should vote, and if they don't vote the way you think,
and then claiming to be the non-racist.
They're kind of race traitors. And it's really weird. So there was that. There's always that pressure, and then something that we spoke a little bit about Labour. Do you remember we were talking about trans issues a couple of podcasts back? And then Labour seemed to have really gone off of the deep end on this, because they're now looking for a new leadership, aren't they? So you've got Rebecca Long-Bailey,
taken over from Corbyn,
who's a lady, and you've got Lisa Tandy, who I really liked, and I still really like in every other thing apart from this madness. And then Keir Starmer, and you had Emily Thornberry.
Yeah.
And then for the deputy, you got Angela Rayner, who I quite like. Dawn Butler, who I think is very, very poor. Mm. And what's happened is that we spoke about the LGBT as divided up, a new group called LGB Alliance, because they feel that LGBT now is too focusing too much on the T element, and it's not being fair on lesbians and gay men.
Yeah.
So a group, including a Stonewall founder, have gone off to start up LBG Alliance.
That tribal thing again.
And then also another group of women, Women's Place UK, have set up a group to defend women's... Basically, that was set up just because in 2010, the Equalities Act came in. And what the attempt to happen is now is something called self-identification, where a person who says they're trans don't have to go to a doctor to get that and legally change. It's legally changed if you decide as an individual. Yeah. So anyone can decide, you don't need medical stuff. Yeah. That sounds fair, but the danger of that is then how do we deal with rape centres and women's toilets and prisons, women's changing areas and prisons and stuff like that. So women now, a large proportion of women are waking up to the fact to think, hold on, this isn't right. So the Women's Group Alliance, I'm getting mixed up, anyway, Women's Group UK or whatever it was set up just to keep the Equalities Act, just for us to stick to the Equalities Act.
Right.
And it was set up by a lady called Ruth Sawatka. I presume she's got something to do with Mark Sawatka, who's head of one of the major unions. So right. They're real left people, right? Yeah. These aren't far-right loons, right? This is about
until now.
Yeah, until now. So what happened was a trans-friendly group have got into Labour and basically got them to sign pledge cards. And part of the pledge is that LGB Alliance and Women's Group UK and other hate groups are going to be kicked out of the Labour Party.
Right.
Janice Turner was on the radio today, who's the Times reporter, who's a massive feminist. And I think she's probably Labour as well. She writes for the Times. And she reckons it's coming up to close to 50% of Labour's members are friendly with Women's Group UK, and they're saying they're going to kick them out of the Labour Party because they're describing them as a hate group. And then Lisa Tandy basically was arguing, and let's not forget that Joe Swinson went big on this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who
yeah.
was the leader of the Lib Dems yeah. in the last election, and she lost her seat because
yeah.
she was getting questioned about it all the time.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
you can't yeah. make it make sense
because it doesn't
make sense.
No.
So you can't in an interview make it make sense.
No.
And she lost her seat.
Oh, see, it's so easy to pull apart.
No, yeah, it's so easy. Yeah, so now Labour have gone in full with this,
and unfortunately, yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? For Labour,
yeah,
that they've cozied up to it,
yeah.
And every time they go on and get asked a question yeah. by a member of the public, or whatever, yeah. they just can't win the debate.
It doesn't make sense.
But you're not getting the Tories questioned in the same way because they're not
yeah.
signing up to it. They're not being asked about it. We don't know. We're not sure what their views are yeah. on it because they don't. It doesn't affect them. But yeah, as soon as you, yeah, it's a difficult one. Isn't it?
Lisa Tandy, when she got questioned about it, she basically said yes, even if it's a child abusing paedophile and rapist who now identifies as a woman should be put in a woman's jail, even though that person may have a penis still. Yeah. And what she said, and Dawn Butler, I can't stand Dawn Butler. That's nothing to do with her colour, by the way. I just think there's so much of what comes out of her mouth is rubbish. She was being interviewed on ITV. And I think it was Richard Madeley who was talking about babies.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah,
she
yeah,
said,
yeah.
let's make it clear, babies are born without a sex.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this all comes from, right? So you've got to know the background to this. A lot of feminist theory was something called the blank slate theory, which means that brains aren't male or female.
Yeah.
They are totally neutral. And yeah. when a baby comes into the world, the only male or female formulation of that brain is what society does, what brings to it, yeah?
yeah?
Forget the fact that you put a two-month-old baby boy and a two-month-old baby girl with a humanistic toy or a mechanistic toy.
Yeah.
The fact that the majority of girl babies will go for the humanistic doll type toy
yeah.
and a boy would focus on the moving bits type stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so much evidence to show that there are differences. Now, yeah. I'm not saying that anyone who says it's either that or that is an idiot because
yeah.
it's always a combination of the two. I don't dispute that I'm probably blind to the fact that I treat my daughter a little bit different to the way that I treat my son.
Yeah, of course we are. Well, look, we all yeah. do, don't we? Like I've always said, if you, I hate this argument because it's fucking stupid. If we got on a helicopter now and went to the Amazon and went to some tribe that had never been contacted, yeah. never seen adverts, never seen all this fucking bullshit,
yeah.
I can guarantee you that the girl kids would yeah. be playing around with yeah. dolls, pretending to be mummy, and the boy kids would be running through the front, chucking.
Yeah.
Chucking sticks, pretending to be hunters.
Yeah,
and but then that kind of, that's probably because the closer you get to nature,
yeah,
the more you need to do that for survival.
Yeah.
The girls, the females, need to look after the babies.
Yeah, 100%.
And the blokes need to provide. So as we get further and further away from nature and just manage to get our food by the click of a button or off your phone, we don't need to focus on that stuff as much. And it's probably why we're more obsessed with this.
But our hardwiring takes time to catch up.
Yeah, of course it does.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So a lot of this stuff that we've had that enabled us to thrive and survive 10,000 years ago probably isn't needed now. But it takes time.
Yeah, but it takes time. But it also, look.
We could revert back.
Absolutely, revert back like that.
Yeah.
We got coronavirus. I mean, you listened to the news this morning.
Yeah.
And it could kick in really bad.
Yeah, of course.
And and if it does, anyone
who's masculine men will be right up the top of the list again.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I can't wait.
But that geek chic shit. get that. We'll be back here with the axes. No, but it's true. Listen,
but it's true. You need it.
Right,
you can't,
I was thinking the other day, right? Why are things like Shakespeare or the classics, the Greek classics, or religious books, you know, whether it be the Islamic one, 1,400 years old, the New Testament, 2,000 years old, the Old Testament, 4,000 years old? Why are they still relevant? A lot of it isn't, don't about selling your daughters into slavery and stuff, because a lot of that is claptrap. Yeah, but why are the stories still relevant?
Yeah.
From 5,000 years ago, because our hardwiring doesn't change that quickly.
No.
It's a speck of dust, isn't it? 5,000 years compared to the 1.5 million. So for her to say babies are born without sex, this is biological flat earth.
Yeah.
This is someone who wants your vote is basically saying the earth is flat, not sphere.
Yeah.
It, the equivalent.
Yeah.
Because there are, you know, and it's like, and Janice Turner made the point, I'm a feminist. I'm desperate for a female leader of the Labour Party. However, every female leader has signed an agreement that disadvantages women. So as a feminist, the only people that I can vote for leader and the second deputy, are men.
Yeah.
And isn't that bizarre? Yeah. You know, why? How have Labour got themselves into this mess?
Yeah, well, as soon as you start kind of treading down the path, it's difficult to get out of, isn't it?
Of course it is. And it's sad, really, because,
it comes from, look, and I know, that especially from Nandi, it comes from a place of goodness. Yeah. They want to do the right thing. But I think they're kind of lost on that one. And it's weird, because there's so many, you kind of, people compare it to these other battles, civil rights battle, the war on racism, war on homosexuality.
Yeah.
It is weird that I think lots of people would agree with all those others, but come up against the stone wall with it.
Listen.
Look at that Graham Linigan fella. You know, he would have been behind the civil rights movement. He would have been behind the gay rights movement. But with this one, it's not...
Jules, there's that incident of that person. I can't remember the name of that person. It's a person with a beard, a full beard and penis, dresses like a woman, identifies as a female.
Yeah.
Right. But that person goes into schools to educate 9, 10, 11 year old children to tell them what a lesbian is. But the person's got a beard and a willy.
Yeah.
Now, I find that confusing as an adult. I don't particularly want my 10 year old having that person in the school.
Yeah.
Right. But this is coming from a person that told my kids about homosexuality from the age of 3.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, it was the easiest thing I ever did.
Yeah.
Most men like women, but some men like men. Most women like men, but some women like women.
Mm.
That's it.
Yeah.
It was easy. I'm not the person that they would try and paint me as. This, I think, is just more complicated. Yeah, so then I said to you earlier, then the Tories have had some crap, haven't they?
A little bit,
you know.
Yeah.
There was that person that they dug up some dirt, and he had quite sexist view. See, I got a bit defensive about this, because initially the initial story was there was a conference in Europe for right leaning people, and it had people that Orban was meant to talk there, Salvini was meant to talk there. I mean, who's the French lady? Le Pen was meant to talk there. I don't think Salvini turned up. And what happened was some conservative special advisor or someone, I know this guy went, Savinsky or whatever his name is, someone else went, and they were jumping on that because he was in the same meeting.
Oh, this is the special advisor to the Tory party
He was in the same meeting as these people, therefore he must be bad.
Right.
And I just thought, well, that's a load of crap, because the thing is, we've come out of the EU, so we're cutting ties with a lot of the people that we maybe had links with. Now, what you've got to, but we want to be an open, we want to be in an open country. We still want to have links. So if you're going to try and make links as a Conservative, you want to go where all the Conservatives are to work out who is best to make links with and who is who are the cranks.
Yeah.
And that seems like totally valid to me, because just because you've got Orban and Salvini and Le Pen there, it doesn't mean that everyone on the right is that. And that's what we keep trying to do, and it works the other way around
as well.
So that made sense. So
yeah, well, that criticism would come from the same people that would say it's perfectly reasonable for Jeremy Corbyn to bring Hezbollah and the IRA.
Yeah, of course, yeah. So, it works the other way. So I was a bit... I don't like that. It's done to smear. It's not done to educate. It's trying to create the Tories' racism narrative.
Yeah.
And then it came out that on a blog that he'd got with geneticism, that black people got lower IQs than white people and all sorts of stuff like that. I know, look, I've read articles that say that's true. I've read articles that say that isn't true. I'm not a geneticist. I don't know. Mm. From the articles that say it's true, white people are quite very, very close to the bottom, you know, and Asians are quite close to the top. So it certainly isn't a white supremacist thing. However, IQ and geneticism has got a really sordid past.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even in America with IQ levels, black kids were taken out of school. All sorts of bad stuff happened on the back of it. And then also the 1800s. Trying to say that the poorer people or low IQ people or demented people shouldn't breed, and various people were sterilised, and then it progressed, and then, you know, when the Nazis got in power, when it came to disabled people, gypsies, and then with Jews, so it all kind of links to it. So I get it. It's a real hot potato.
Yeah, of course it is, because it's crap. Isn't it? It doesn't. Like, you've got to judge everyone on an individual basis.
Of course you do.
Well, morons that are white, morons that are Asian, morons that are black. That's the geniuses point. Through the three. It's like,
well, so Robert Winston said that in an article in last week's Times. He said that whole geneticist argument is based on what's best for the state, not what's best for the individual. And if we are on an individual basis, it's a no-no. But this, so then I had that discussion with someone who was saying, but why didn't they do the checks? And this person was employed on a contractual basis. He was a super forecaster.
Mm.
So what they did was, because Cummings wants to get not the normal public school boys into the civil service that all think alike.
Yeah.
Matthew Saeed, who's a sports writer, has written a brilliant book on real diversity. Not diversity of colour, but people who all think the same.
Mm.
It's a diversity of people thinking differently. And often colour and culture will come into it, because different colours and cultures will think in different ways. But we need to be the thinking differently. And so I think that makes sense to me, bring people in that maybe think outside the box.
Yeah.
Even autistic people or, you know, people with who we would see as a mental disability in some, I probably used the wrong words there, but, you know, with different syndromes and stuff, could think outside the box.
Mm.
So this guy was in the top 10% of people that could forecast business and things that might happen in the future. So he was taken in as an advisor on a contractual basis. So by the sounds of it, they didn't look into it, into his background that deeply. I don't know if that's a charitable thing, but that's what I'd read. But again, that links all the Tories and Boris and, you know, think they're this and that, something else. So I don't know. But and then the Dave thing, calling Boris a racist, which irritates me.
Yeah, the musician, yeah.
Because then the next day I'm sitting with my seven-year-old watching Newsbeat, and then, you know, and you hear, you've got to explain to your seven-year-old what all that means at breakfast time, when you're trying to get out of the house.
Yeah.
But on the other side of the coin, maybe we need to look at it from black people's point of view, in a sense. There have been quite a few issues with
Windrush was a problem, wasn't it? Yeah.
You got the Windrush and an investigation that was done recently. They reckon that they're trying to get the word racist out of the attitudes that were there, and then Grenfell and stuff. I mean, I don't know.
The Grenfell thing to me is like, I don't get it. The Grenfell thing is totally different situation.
I think so, yeah.
I think, look, we live in North London, in Camden, that's been Labour forever. And all the flats around here have got exactly the same cladding.
Yeah.
And were put in during Tony Blair's Labour government. So what, it's got nothing to do with the Tories.
Yeah.
And God knows any of them buildings could have gone up instead of Grenfell. Yeah. And it would have been exactly the same
thing. Listen, there's a really good podcast, a BBC podcast about Grenfell. There's about 100 of them. So I certainly haven't gone back, but I've listened to the new ones as they come out. It's bloody complicated. You listen to the legal arguments of who put it up, because you've got contractors, subcontractors.
But then that stuff's tough, all over the country. Debbie's parents have got a flat in Gibraltar, and they've got it on their block.
Yeah.
I mean, and these are expensive blocks of flats.
Yeah.
But it's just gone round as the thing to do for a period of time, isn't
it? Well, I used to come in on the West Way, and all those by Harrow Road, all them tower blocks.
Yeah.
They were green, grey concrete, nasty. And then they put a lovely light blue, dark blue cladding. And every time I must have bored, but the family said, look how much nicer it looks.
I thought, funny, but I've always thought they look crap. I've always thought, I'm much more kind of architectural purist, you know. I don't particularly like a lot of the brutalist kind of 60s, 70s architectures. But not much of it. But it's got more of a purity when you can actually see me anyway. I prefer a brick building than painted purple.
I agree.
Because it's not being real. And I had the same issue with a lot of these flats. Regardless of whether they go up in flames. I mean,
But I think it's the case is, did they do it on the cheap? And obviously they did, and it shouldn't. Yeah. It's obvious, shouldn't have been flammable. Yeah, you know.
So yeah, sure. Right.
But it's trying to work out where the blame lies, and I don't think it's as simple as a lot of people make out. Because there's over 20 for one block alone. There's over 20 different contractors and subcontractors, and trying to work out where. So it's complicated.
Well, yeah. Well, like I said, those blocks in Gibraltar that are full of the same stuff, that are full of like white people, Spanish people, or whatever. It's got nothing to do with racism. Yeah. Really. Well, wealthy European people.
Yeah. Well, it's the same. Yeah, look, I suppose it betrays an attitude that some people would think it betrays an attitude that the Tories, because of their stereotype, don't give a shit about poor people, and a lot of poor people tend to be black. So I think that's where it comes from. My argument is, if that's there, then they've got to try and do their best not.
I can understand that point of view in many other ways, especially like something like Windrush, you could argue it. Absolutely.
Definitely, because I think that is shameful. I think the West Indian community, because of our age group, that's the group that I certainly most link to.
Yeah.
And I think they've brought a massive contribution to this country. And I think my life is massively richer, and my life history is massively richer because of it.
Yeah.
So it is shameful. But that brings us on to, because I wanted to talk about Lawrence Fox as well, about the Meghan, whether that was racist.
Because
that's been brought up now as racist. I don't see that racist at all. I go back far enough to know how the women who marry into the princes are treated.
Yeah.
Fergie was treated horrendously.
She's called
a ginger minger.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Tell me the equivalent of what Meghan's got to that.
Yeah.
I had Catherine in the cab once, didn't I, when they split up. And it was awful.
Oh, what, before they got married?
Yeah. They split up for a bit. She was in with a couple of friends, and she must have been quite raw to her at the time. And, how they were treating her mum, because she's faux middle class. She's not really middle class, because you weren't a BA, do you know what I mean? You get above her station, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah,
and people say, because when they said, an uppity woman...
Mm.
And they called Meghan an uppity or something. And then that's racist because they used that word in the slavery days. And I was thinking, but hold on, I'm looking in the dictionary now. Colour doesn't come into it. Yeah, or are we meant to only use certain words against certain people?
Yeah.
Because that seems racist.
Yeah, of course.
So she was called, Catherine's mum was called uppity.
Any of the issues about the press being racist towards her are pretty weak, I think. Look, they, like you said, I agree. All of them got it. Diana got slated, didn't she? Absolutely slated. And it goes back to what we started off with, that the press have these headlines that are clickbait. The printed press version of that, but isn't it? It's like people, for some reason, I couldn't give a stuff about it. I mean, there's an article yesterday about Harry coming back to the UK and saying, "Just call me Harry." I've got no interest in any of it. But for some reason, people have.
Yeah.
And the more kind of incendiary the story, the more they'll want to read
and
it.
And then they compete with each other. I'm reading a book now called Black Wave. It's about how Iran and Saudi Arabia started to come up in the 1979. It was about the three things that happened: the fall of the Shah, the raid on the Mecca mosque, and the Russians invading Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And what happened was two links of Islam started to compete with each other.
Yeah.
And when competition happens, it just gets crazier and crazier.
Yeah.
And it's the same, like you say, with the media. Press, it's on so different levels.
Yeah.
But
so that was the story, wasn't it, about him being racist? And then Lawrence Fox, the actor, who's kind of come from a line of famous British actors, was on Question Time last month. And that was brought up.
Yeah.
They were talking about Meghan and then a woman in the audience turned around and said it was it's obviously a racist.
Yeah.
And he said, it's not, absolutely not. We're such a lovely country and we're one of the least racist countries in the world. And then she tried to shut him down or commented that he, what was it? How was it?
So, oh, you're a white privileged white male.
Privileged. So obviously, all right, she's not shutting him down. She wasn't telling him he couldn't have his opinion, but it's almost used as in a way of saying, well, your opinion's not valid.
Yeah, of course it is, or less valid.
Yeah.
And that's my issue. Does white privilege exist? Look, that's the one reason why I went from The Guardian to The Times, because I used to get The Guardian every day. Then it just worked out to family just once a week.
Yeah.
And 3 weeks on the trot, I saw the phrase white privilege, and it just pissed me off. And I just thought, fuck it, I'm not doing it anymore. I'm not paying for this. So does white privilege exist? Are in a predominantly white country, are you more privileged if you're white? Yeah, probably.
Well, does Chinese privilege exist in China?
Yeah, of course it would.
Does Indian privilege exist in... Indian Hindu privilege exist in India?
Well,
of course it does. It's majority privilege, isn't it?
What's the biggest indicator of wealth or of earnings?
Or should I say, does white privilege exist in China, rather?
Yeah, no, of course it does.
No. Or the oil boards of the Saudi Arabian companies, you know what I mean? Where Saudi Aramco won't let anyone who's not a Saudi be on their board. Yeah.
But there's all sorts of privilege, isn't there?
Mm.
What's the biggest indicator to earnings and wealth is IQ.
Yeah.
So the higher the IQ you've got, the higher chance of earning money that you've got.
Yeah.
So there's an IQ privilege. How do we solve that?
A height privilege, a good-looking privilege, well, a fitness privilege.
Malcolm Gladwell, in his book, said that the higher proportion of CEOs in countries are three or four inches above the average height.
Yeah.
So there is a height privilege. Yeah.
A weight privilege?
Yeah, of course there is. And even looks privilege. Yeah. I reckon in court cases, better-looking people get found not guilty more often. And when they get found guilty, they get lesser sentences.
Yeah. And that is quite a weird as well. You know, like you're right, because...
Mental health, just, depression.
Just, yeah, all of it.
Invisible stuff. Yeah, sorry, you were going to say.
But like, that's probably fucking bad breath privilege, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? You walk into an interview and you stink, you ain't getting a job, are you? It's like... kind of just going back to the Labour leadership thing. Yeah, it is weird because it's almost as though we've got this idea of what a leader, a country's leader, a prime minister, president, whatever, king, queen, should look like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And when you go on, and I've heard people talking about the two females, Nandi and Lisa Nandy and Rebecca Long-Bailey and Keir Starmer. And Keir Starmer kind of almost comes across as the most stately looking, doesn't he? He looks as though he would look okay walking off a plane wherever in the world as our representative, as a prime minister. Yeah. But it's a funny one, isn't it? And I don't know. And that's a privilege, but it's not a white privilege.
Well, look,
it's a male privilege. It's
it's
all of them.
It's the norm.
Yeah, exactly.
What did he say? Right, he
got said a nice the word head of hair. It's all of it.
He said that racism should be reserved for racists. It's true. He pointed out the fear of being falsely branded racist can have catastrophic events, citing what happened in Manchester. And it's true.
Yeah.
That's what I keep hearing, that we're racist. Yet for 30 years, we allowed young white girls to be abused in their thousands all around the countries because we didn't want to be seen as racist.
And right? I think it's also dangerous as well. I mean, look, we're one of the only countries in Europe that has never elected a far-right MP.
Yeah.
The far-right figure, as far as I know, has never entered the House of Commons.
But then again...
Unless we're going to say that the UKIP are far-right, which is...
Yeah, like crap, but we all want to be in a better place than other side. I mean, I always thought this ages ago, people say, oh, your driving's crap. Well, not people, my wife probably said, your driving's rubbish. And I've always wanted to say, yeah, but look, I'm better than him over there. And I thought, yeah, but you don't want to be good. You don't get better if you compare yourself to... So we could always improve. But,
yeah, sure.
But I am fed up. With this,
and I think a lot of people are, which is why when he turned around and said to her, like going back to Fox on Question Time, and she said, you're a privileged white male, and he said that in itself is a racist statement, he got a massive round of applause. Yeah. I think there's an element of lots of normal, regular people, and not only white people, black people, brown people, all sorts of people, who are like, come on, let's be a bit realistic. It's not the worst country in the world.
Yeah.
It's really not. We are trying to get better.
Yeah. But I think there is a danger of it getting worse because of the constantness
of it. Yeah. And that goes back to this Tory guy you were talking about. That is one thing that keeps on coming up.
Yeah.
The more you focus on the rights of all these groups, I'm not saying you shouldn't focus on them, of course we should, but the more we go on about them and how patriarchal the system is and how racist we all are and sexist we all are, the other side, you're going to get an element of the other side that are going to start looking into that far right literature and start saying, okay, if we're all groups now, what group am I? Okay, what am I? Okay, oh, well, what about this IQ literature? Well, why are we talking about that? That's the
any
danger,
group
isn't it?
That feels threatened binds together.
Yeah.
And you can't have identity politics without a white identity politics developing.
Yeah.
You can't. And that's but it was the reaction that was really scary, because then his union called all other actors to denounce him. The next day on Twitter, his union said, we must call out all other actors to denounce him.
Yeah.
This is scary stuff. Because what did he
But
say?
I think actually, because I read an article on that, and they did say that there was a couple of rogue Twitter users.
Yeah, but they worked for the union.
Yeah, they did. It came from within. But they did pull it off Twitter afterwards.
So again, it's not...
But yeah, but we know, I mean, we're not stupid, we know he'll be affected further down the line.
Well, he's had to come off now, because he's starting to get depressed. It's too much. He's done a valiant fight, but it's gone on for weeks.
Yeah.
But that brings me to two other stories, quickly. You know that Afua Hirsch? Afua Hirsch is a commentator, isn't she? Far-left commentator. Mm. She's another one. It's critical race theory, yeah?
Yeah.
Who, basically, whiteness is a problem. I don't even know what whiteness is. This new thing called whiteness. I think it's white thinking. I think it's a white way of thinking. Kehinde Andrews, who said UK universities are like the plantations of old, and said that, I heard him on the radio a while back saying Mark Duggan was assassinated by the state.
Right.
This person is a teacher in racial studies in a British, I think, Leeds University, Birmingham University. He and Afua Hirsch are of the same way of thinking. He describes whiteness as a psychosis. So basically, it's a massive generalisation of me on the basis of my colour. And the same as a Polish person, who's just got here, who's the same as every other white person. So I'm the same as Prince Harry, William, and the same as the homeless man on the Strand, solely based on the colour. Even though there's such a wide range of white people, white thinking, which I think this is, whiteness is a psychosis. So basically, his theory and Afua Hirsch's theory is that if you don't agree with them, that every problem that black people have got based on white colonialism and slavery, then that is whiteness and white thinking, which is a psychosis. So basically, if you disagree with me, you're mentally unwell, right? So what's the answer to this? I don't know, give her a show on the BBC. So what they've done is that Afua Hirsch, who comes from a really privileged background, Wimbledon, private school, mixed race. She's doing a programme on whiteness. and they put the advert out, do you really identify with your white culture and stuff like that? Now, anyone who identifies with their white culture, to me, is a bit suspect for starters, yeah? So they're looking for the cranks. Oh, look, I haven't seen it. Program's been made yet, so I don't want to jump to conclusion, but it sounds to me they're looking for the cranks so she can then belittle them. What I've got to pay money for.
Yeah.
And then that brings me on to another someone posted about this show in the National Theatre called Death of England. By all accounts, it's meant to be a really impressive performance by Timothy Spall's son, Rafe Spall. Spall, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's basically it's a one-man monologue. His dad died during the last World Cup, and it's the son trying to come to terms with his white working class racist toxicity that was passed down from generation to generation from his dad, yeah? Mm. And it's meant to be quite powerful, and again, I haven't seen it. My issue with it is, it's written by two black writers. And I had a big argument with a friend of mine over this the other day, because I was saying to him, look, if we're going to create a system where there's a set of rules, we've got to try and have that set of rules the same for everybody.
Yeah.
Now, I know that it can't, because not, you know, the whole white race thing, you can't, people's experience are different, so it can't be exactly the same. But you can't say it's one rule for one and 180 degrees for the other.
Mm.
You can't do that, because it's all going to come apart, and it's all going to lead to what we were just speaking about. So basically, you've got two black writers talking about white working class, a version of white working class that I'm not familiar with, but I don't doubt for a second it exists somewhere. We were lucky, we lived in London, probably didn't see it. On the outskirts, it probably did exist, right? And maybe does still exist. But you've got two black writers writing about this for The National, which is aimed at middle and upper class people.
Yeah.
So where does white working class people come into this?
Yeah.
Now, if white people were talking about, what two white writers were talking about the toxicity of black culture,
yeah,
you would have, what's his name, who worked for Ken Livingstone, outside boycotting it. And why is a Fua Hirsch doing a program about the toxicity of, inverted commas, whiteness?
Yeah.
And it's like, I was trying to argue, the argument I had with my friend was, there's got to be an element of consistency and fairness in this.
Mm.
Her argument was, but black writers haven't had an opportunity for ages. And I said, yeah, I agree. But we're talking past each other.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that black writers, I'm proud from, you know, when you had to have British actors in The Wire because they couldn't get jobs here. I loved black comedy when we were kids. It was brilliant. I don't understand why we didn't have more of it. And it's shameful that talented black comedians didn't get the opportunities. And I'm glad they're getting the opportunities now. So I'm not saying they shouldn't have had opportunities, but either we create a world where white people can be horrible or write critical plays about black people, or not.
Yeah.
And if we can't, then it shouldn't. Not sure it should be the other way around.
But it opens. It starts important conversations, doesn't it?
Well, there was this. You know, just because I've just got the eye on the clock. There's a book called American Dirt in America. This is a perfect example of it, and it's basically written by a white woman who. Is talking about the Mexican migration.
Yeah.
And it's
a book. It was one of the books of the week for Oprah, wasn't it? And the story is that it's a story of a woman who tries to get into America.
Yeah.
And her experiences with cartels and gangs and drugs. And,
But she started writing it. 2 years writing it. And then she went to Mexico, had to scrap it because she realised it wasn't authentic enough. So what happened was she was in a part of Mexico where she saw a load of kids that were amputees selling cigarettes and bits of food and stuff. She couldn't work out there were so many amputees in that area there. And what it was when they try and jump the trains, they don't do it properly and fall off and get caught under the tracks and lose a limb.
Yeah.
But they haven't got the money to go back to their families and can't get through to America. So they're left in limbo land, right? And I'm thinking, in a debate that we have on immigration, whether it be this country and more so in America, where it's kind of, it's abstract, isn't it? It's migrants, you know, it's dehumanised. And great art, whether it be film or books or sometimes music, it should be an empathy machine, shouldn't it? It should personalise something that is otherwise abstract.
Yeah.
I I'm quite well read, and I didn't know that. And that makes it more real. So when you're talking about migrants, I don't have nothing in my head. Yeah. I might think about individuals. So it's bringing something abstract onto a human level. Mm. And Oprah Winfrey praised it. It was New York Times best book. And now they've turned on it because white people shouldn't be able to discuss the Mexican experience. Yeah. And they're boycotting her, and the thing is,
and she said she won't maybe never write again. Yeah, it's really affected her because she's got criticism from all angles in newspapers and on the radio, doing loads of interviews, and it's all critical.
Yeah, but someone had done an investigation on it on their equivalent of the BBC. Six or seven people in separate interviews criticised that she said that at a Mexican barbecue they were dipping their chicken into sweet sauce.
Yeah.
And no way would any Mexican dip chicken into sweet sauce, right?
Yeah.
And the guy read the book and it doesn't happen in the book.
Yeah.
So what's happened is one person said it, another person said it, and then they're all catching on. Yeah. So they're all slagging the book off and no one's read it.
Yeah.
You know, so this is where I'm...
And the shit journalists go along with it. They don't question it, they don't read the book, and it's just this fest just of nonsense.
Part of a machine, that just winds people up.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying that if you've got a... You know, there's no right or wrong on this, is there?
No.
On this race stuff. Did you ever watch that Bill Burr comedy?
No.
Well, it's called Paper Tigers. It's on Netflix. It's brilliant. I love it, right? I was speaking to my mate about it the other day. Bill Burr, he's a white comedian. And I was saying that sometimes you listen to him and you think, he sails quite close to the wind, you know, especially he's very outspoken at Me Too and all this sort of stuff. He's pretty fearless, but he's really thought-provoking as well.
Yeah.
He's big on male stuff, right, which I quite like. But I didn't really, sometimes you think, because I said to my mate the other day, I said, he can't sail close to the wind. He said, yeah, no, I thought he could be a bit racist sometimes. And I said, yeah, but there's a bit in Paper Tigers where he's watching the Elvis documentary with his wife, right?
Right.
And who's black. And he said, we're watching this documentary and she's tutting. So, you know, so. And he's saying, what are you tutting for? Do you know what I mean? You can feel this tension building.
Yeah.
And then she says, you know, she had come up against a critique of Elvis Presley stealing Brat Gold, you know, this, that and the other. And then you think, yeah, she's got a fair point. And then he said, so I said, and then he comes back with his reply. And then you're there thinking, yeah, he's got a fair point as well. And he talks through this conversation.
Yeah.
And you just think, you know what, everyone's got a fair point here. And that is so much richer.
Mm. It's like, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Have you ever seen that film Rashomon? With the it's a Japanese one. It's about a samurai gets murdered or something, or someone gets murdered along the way in the countryside.
Yeah,
and the samurai or people come and investigate it. It's an old black and white film, and they speak to seven different witnesses.
Yeah,
and so the film is in seven different parts because they would tell their side of what they saw, and. Every one of them tells the truth. Every one of them is right in some ways. And every one of them is wrong in other ways.
Mm.
But they're all honest. It's all perspective.
Yeah.
And you're left at the end of it just not really knowing, getting to the bottom of it, or the truth. And that's life sometimes, isn't it? There are so many different perspectives or way of looking at things.
Mm.
And that's why I've had to come off social media, because it's so fucking dumb. Because it's just one side or another side with no meeting in the middle. But the beauty is the meeting in the middle, as with Bill Burr and his missus having a conversation.
Yeah,
that's and that's why I just fed up with the whole thing.
Yeah.
Anyway... I've got a couple of other stories, but I think we should end it, and I'll save my other little stories for next time.
Yeah, we'll do another one a bit sooner.
Yeah, so. Well, I'd like to, yeah. I just think
more than enough to get on with, isn't it?
Cheap therapy for me. Yeah. I miss out on an hour and a half work, but I get a lot off my chest, and I don't have to... That's why I've come off... not gone so much, so active on Facebook, because I thought it's therapy for me, but as I said... pisses everybody else off.
Mm.
But I only noticed it in other people, and then it dawned on me, but if I notice it on other people, that might be me too. Anyway, laters.
See ya.